Chapter 4. He was nearly 19. He stood on the platform on prize day reciting a Greek oration of his own composition. The hall was full of schoolboys and their parents, but Morris affected to be addressing the Hague Conference and to be pointing out to it the folly of its ways. "What stupidity is this, O Andres Europinaisi, to talk of abolishing war? What? Is not Ares the son of Zeus himself? Moreover, war renders you robust by exercising your limbs, not forsooth like those of my opponent." The Greek was vile. Morris had got the prize on account of the thought, and barely thus. The examining master had stretched a point in his favour since he was leaving, and a respectable chap, and moreover leaving for Cambridge, where prize books on his shelves would help to advertise the school. So he received Grote's History of Greece amid tremendous applause. As he returned to his seat, which was next to his mother, he realized that he had again become popular, and wondered how. The clapping continued. It grew to an ovation. Ada and Kitty were pounding away with scarlet faces on the further side. Some of his friends, also leaving, cried speech. This was irregular and quelled by the authorities, but the headmaster himself rose and said a few words. Hall was one of them, and they would never cease to feel him so. The words were just. The school clapped not because Morris was eminent, but because he was average. It could celebrate itself in his image. People ran up to him afterwards saying, "Jolly good old man," quite sentimentally, and even, "It will be bilge in this hole without you." His relations shared in the triumph. On previous visits he had been hateful to them. "Sorry, mater, but you and the kids will have to walk alone," had been his remark after a football match when they had tried to join on to him in his mud and glory. Ada had cried. Now Ada was chatting quite ably to the captain of the school, and Kitty was being handed cakes, and his mother was listening to his housemaster's wife on the disappointments of installing hot air. Everyone and everything had suddenly harmonized. Was this the world? A few yards off he saw Dr. Barry, their neighbour from home, who caught his eye and called out in his alarming way,
"Congratulations, Morris, on your triumph. Overwhelming. I drink to it in this cup."
He drained it.
"Of extremely nasty tea."
Morris laughed and went up to him, rather guiltily, for his conscience was bad. Dr. Barry had asked him to befriend a little nephew who had entered the school that term, but he had done nothing. It was not the thing. He wished that he had had more courage now that it was too late, and he felt a man.
"And what's the next stage in your triumphal career? Cambridge?"
"So they say."
"So they say, do they? And what do you say?"
"I don't know," said the hero, good-temperedly.
"And after Cambridge, what? Stock exchange?"
"I suppose so. My father's old partner talks of letting me in if all goes well."
"And after you're let in by your father's old partner, what? A pretty wife?"
Morris laughed again.
"Who will present the expectant world with a Morris the Third? After which, old age, grandchildren, and finally the daisies. So that's your notion of a career. Well, it isn't mine."
"What's your notion, Doctor?"
called Kitty.
"To help the weak and right the wrong, my dear," he replied, looking across at her.
"I'm sure it is all our notions," said the housemaster's wife, and Mrs. Hall agreed.
"Oh, no, it's not. It isn't consistently mine, or I should be looking after my Dickie instead of lingering on this scene of splendour."
"Do bring dear Dickie to say how do you do to me," asked Mrs. Hall. "Is his father down here too?"
"Mother," Kitty whispered.
"Yes, my brother died last year," said Dr. Barry. "The incident slipped your memory. War did not render him robust by exercising his limbs, as Morris supposes. He got a shell in the stomach."
He left them.
"I think Dr. Barry gets cynical," remarked Ada. "I think he's jealous."
She was right. Dr. Barry, who had been a lady killer in his time, did resent the continuance of young men. Poor Morris encountered him again. He had been saying goodbye to his housemaster's wife, who was a handsome woman, very civil to the older boys. They shook hands warmly. On turning away, he heard Dr. Barry's,
"Well, Morris, a youth irresistible in love as in war,"
and caught his cynical glance.
"I don't know what you mean, Dr. Barry."
"Oh, you young fellows, butter wouldn't melt in your mouth these days. Don't know what I mean. Prudish of a petticoat. Be frank, man, be frank. Don't take anyone in. The frank mind's the pure mind. I'm a medical man and an old man, and I tell you that. Man that is born of woman must go with woman if the human race is to continue.
Morris stared after the housemaster's wife, underwent a violent repulsion from her, and blushed crimson. He had remembered Mr. Ducey's diagrams. A trouble, nothing as beautiful as a sorrow, rose to the surface of his mind, displayed its ungainliness, and sank. Its precise nature he did not ask himself, for his hour was not yet, but the hint was appalling, and, hero though he was, he longed to be a little boy again, and to stroll half awake forever by the colourless sea. Dr. Barry went on lecturing him, and under the cover of a friendly manner, said much that gave pain.